This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
What did Bruce say about the season only really begins when the daffodils start to arrive?
I'm sure it was when you could smell the hot dogs. It was always when you could smell the hot dogs from Bruce. When the hot dogs are pushing out of the ground.
Followed by the daffodils. But I don't think there's going to be any daffodils this year, unfortunately.
This is going to be some comeback, though, isn't it? I mean, you didn't expect Neil Taylor to fire us to promotion, but when it happens, my God. It's going to be some party.
Well, all these people who are trying to summarise why it's all gone wrong, and they're all saying Grealish is out. If Grealish comes back in this next week or two and fires us to 10 consecutive wins, then I will believe their synopsis of why we have failed this season.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Whelan is floated in on the volley. Oh, it's unbelievable. Jack Grealish on his return to the Aston Villa side has scored a volley. The home fans were singing his name moments ago. They'll be building a statue to him after that.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com, and joining me on this podcast that both mourns our two-game without a win run and also celebrates our entry into the 2018/19 Championship playoffs. Dan Rogers of the villaunderground.com and Mr. Chris Budd of the Upper Holt. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello there. I'm mourning the fact that we will no longer have to eat our Villa dogs in the Championship, and we can tuck into a Balti pie as Premier League title contenders. Am I getting ahead of myself? I don't know.
When you start to get ahead of yourself, yeah, people start to. I don't know if is this a Villa trait. When you say something like real, people go, "Oh, you're being negative, being negative." When you say something positive, no, don't say that. You know, like
jinx it.
So you can't win. You can never win.
Unfortunately, history suggests shit goes wrong.
Let's make no mistake. This will not go how any of us imagine it to go.
Well, yeah, that's a guarantee. I mean, before we get into the show, how do you think this is going to go, Dan Rogers?
Well, if I think...
We're talking about the playoffs.
Oh, not my life in general. I think that Villa Park will be the
Chop. We haven't got long.
Do you know what? I haven't actually stopped to think about it yet, and I've just, you know, when you get that terrible sick feeling in the back of your throat when you're worrying now. I'm worrying now. It's like Derby Day nerves all of a sudden. I think we'll be okay at Villa Park, but we need to go to the Hawthorns with a couple of goal buffer.
Agreed. My nerves started kicking in walking down the whole end steps after the game. I was thinking, all right, that game's done, and now it's on.
This is real now.
It's a different vibe this year.
It could go like we just cruise all the way through. But we'll talk about this in a second, obviously. On this show, we will very briefly look at the Norwich game, and in terms of just in context of its relevance to the playoffs, because it was a dead rubber game after all, and we should have won, but never mind. We will discuss that quickly. But the main point of the show, after we've discussed the Scott Hogan touch count meter,
smashing it by the way,
is the playoffs, and it's the two-legged affair against West Bromwich Albion. Although for a few minutes on that last championship day, Leeds, I think, yeah, Ipswich were winning. So I think when West Brom had, I think they pegged Derby back, didn't they? So they were one goal away from flipping everything. So suddenly they would be playing, well, potentially Middlesbrough at that stage, and we would be playing two legs against Leeds, which would have been
fireworks. That would have been.
I did start to contemplate that and how I felt about that, but then Derby started scoring, and by then it was academic. Anyway, so first the 3 points, then we will discuss the Norwich game briefly, as I've mentioned, and then we'll get into the playoffs and look at the West Brom game with a bit of detail and basically evaluate our chances of running them through as we march on to Wembley. Right, 3 points. Number one, Mr. Dan Rogers.
Well, everybody's favourite crab, Ashley Westwood.
I thought that was Stan Petrov.
No. Isn't it strange how so many Villa players go on to have such illustrious careers? I mean, Ashley Westwood has been unveiled as Burnley's player and player's player of the year. And there was a nice photograph of him on social media holding two trophies, possibly for the first time in his life. I have to say that, you know, fair play to the guy. Jokes aside, he's gone on and he's carved a career at Premier League level. Do I miss him? Do you miss him?
No.
Well, two questions. First question, could he get into the Villa team, current Villa team?
I don't think so.
Chris Budd?
I wouldn't play him.
Second question, who would you prefer, Villa's Player of the Year and Supporters Player of the Year, Player's Player of the Year, whatever? I think he won them everything.
Person of the Century.
Person of the Year, Best Nobel Goal of Peace the Year. Prize. Nobel Peace Prize. Mm. Would you have Ashley Westwood over John McGinn?
Not a prayer. Do you know what this is? This for me, is this sort of like symptomatic of
how shit the Premier League is?
How
exactly
that's what the Premier League is, actually. Yeah.
That's what I'm getting to.
It
exactly.
is, isn't it?
I was going to say, it's like the equivalent of the Busby Babes, Lambert's Lads. Like Matthew Loughton, Jordan Ayew, you know, they all pop back up to the Premier League. And
congratulations, you know, to Jordan Ayew, by the way, for not getting relegated this season.
That's a good achievement for him.
You know, these were young players when we got them, and, you know, they were kind of gambles.
They're beige.
There was no guarantees. But, yeah, they're not, like, outstanding. They're not real characters like your McGinns. I mean, I put this Westwood picture up and just announced it, but I announced it completely neutral without any opinion of my own on that, just to see what responses it would get. And you get the ones laughing at it, obviously, which, you know, that would have been my natural start-off point if I was doing a tweet about it, take the piss out of it a bit. And then other people, like, in almost revisionist form, going, oh, I always knew he was going to be a class player, oh, class act, completely, you know, fans got on his back, destroyed him, you know, he was always a class act.
He was an average player in a shit team.
But as we've just said, you know, he couldn't get in the current Villa team, and we're a championship playoff team. And he's not as good as McGinn, our own player of the year. So it puts it in context. No disrespect to Westwood, because when he first signed to Burnley, he was kind of on the bench, fringe, you know, getting games, but, you know, he wasn't like a regular. And it just shows you the levels, especially that bottom half of that Premier League is not that hot. And if you took this team, I mean, unlikely we'll keep Abraham. But if we kept Mings, or we got him on a permanent, should I say, and we took this team that we've got now, I think we finished comfortably mid-table, no problem. If we make some savvy additions, then we can do, you know, pretty much what Wolves has done and really kick in, because there's so many 3 points on offer in the Premier League. Anyway, point number two, Mr. Budd.
So it goes down to the final day for the Premier League. It's a straight shootout between City and Liverpool. We'll go down to the last day after City beat Leicester with a wonder goal from Kompany. And after so much talk in recent years of the top four, top six monopoly, you know, becoming very boring and City being out there miles ahead of everyone, in comparison to the rest of Europe, it's become actually one of the most exciting title races really since City and United went toe-to-toe all those years ago.
The funny thing is the so-called top four actually don't seem to want to be the top four this season. I mean, Arsenal stumbled, Manchester United flaked out in the end, and even Spurs. I mean, Spurs have been hit by a few injuries and obviously playing a lot of games with the Champions League, but none of them have convincingly strayed behind Manchester City or Liverpool.
And Sarri Ball's been widely criticised by their own fans, so it's...
Yeah,
none of those teams are looking in particularly great shape.
Yeah, as you were saying, in terms of a tight race, it's probably one of the best in Europe. I mean, and the only thing on its level is in the Dutch league with Ajax and PSV, 80 points neck and neck. With Ajax actually on for the treble now after winning the Dutch Cup 4-0 against Willem Duur at the weekend. So if they can win the Champions League, that's Ajax rubber stamped back in it as a European giant again. But yeah, the other comparisons, like Juventus 16 points clear, Barcelona
Juve win it for like the eighth consecutive year? Italian football has become so weak, hasn't it? And Spanish football is essentially a 2-3 horse race, and then yeah. 17 teams who are bang average.
We don't even need to talk about Scottish football. Celtic 9 points difference is the same as Barcelona.
Which in recent years, that's a close contest, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah. And in Germany, Bayern have got a 4-point gap over Dortmund. So the English league, not too bad. I just think, I mean, when you look at Liverpool have only lost one game, that also shows you the...
It's staggering, isn't it, really, to think you can lose one game and not win the league with the points tally they're going to end with. It's crazy, really.
But it also shows you that it's not the... hasn't got the depth of the league. I mean, when Arsenal, the Invincibles, I mean, Liverpool have got more points than them, but they were Invincibles, but a lot of those were draws, and you know, which suggests there was a bit more depth in those days.
I think to turn that on its head is, you know, that's a good... good selection of the top leagues. But when you look at the Premier League and then you maybe look down to the Championship, particularly the Premier League this season, and how all those years when we were sort of bumbling around the bottom end of the Premier League, how few points that you require now to stay in the Premier League. And that's a reflection of the dominance and control at the top of the division.
Yeah.
And, you know, just picking up that point of, you know, if you lose one game all season and you don't win the league, it shows you how it's monopolised to the top of the league for me.
Yeah.
I think if you look at, you know, you look at the Dutch and you look at the German leagues, at least there's a competitive edge, you know, across 3, 4, 5 teams and in a bit of a mix there.
It's quite strange, you know, you compare the sort of the competitiveness, but while the Premier League is reasonably competitive between sort of 4, 5, 6 teams, it hasn't seemed to translate into Europe for a while. You know, it's still the Spanish who've just dominated for the last 5 or 6 seasons.
I wonder why that is. You get super teams, don't you, across the top European leagues? Like, you know, I think most of us, I suppose I can't speak for you, but I grew up on watching a lot of Serie A on Channel 4.
Yeah, yeah.
Was back in the day, it was a top quality division with top quality players.
And every season you had about 5 or 6, wasn't there, who could win it?
You know, the Spanish league, I watch a lot of Spanish football, but you can pretty much guarantee that one of the top three will beat everyone else. You know, Barcelona have you know, really monopolised La Liga now, a top quality team. Scottish football's a, you know, no one's got interest in Scottish football outside of Scotland.
Yeah, in Premier League, I mean, to their credit, Wolves are the only ones that have actually beaten some of the top four teams and shaken it up a bit. That's why I was a bit precarious about Liverpool's last game was against Wolves. And I thought, well, on the counter-attack, you know, Wolves could bring a few tears to that ground, but I think it would be pretty much academic anyway.
Yeah, with, I think
City just needed to beat Brighton. Anyway, point number three, let's cast our eyes to our playoff game. And if you're looking for a blueprint for how Villa should approach the first leg against the Albion at Villa Park, Bayer Leverkusen, who are in the mix for a Champions League place in the Bundesliga, played Eintracht Frankfurt, who also are in the mix. I think they were fourth at the start of play. So it's a bit of a crunch game. Bayer Leverkusen scored 6 goals in the first 36 minutes to set up a 6-1 win. And now Leverkusen are fifth on the same points as Frankfurt, who in fourth, ironically, have a better goal difference despite their hammering. So Villa, you know what to do. I mean, that would be bliss. Going to Villa Park, 12:30 in the morning. It's technically afternoon, isn't it?
It feels like AM to most of us.
But it feels like AM to me. But if we can go 6-0 up in the first 36 minutes, then I can leave at half time and go back to bed.
For a week.
For a week. Yeah. Or, well, 3 days or whatever it is. Right. We'll get on to the playoffs shortly. Just first of all, I just want to say a massive thank you for the new patrons that signed up since the last show. Charlie Pearson, Matt Bowling, James Cardell, and also a special thanks to New South Wales in Australia. You know who you are. Thank you very much. Also, if you use the Mailman Said Facebook page, you can also support us through by becoming a Facebook supporter. But if you want to be a patron, just go to mailmansaid.com, click on the patron link for further details, and please do sign up and support the show as we march into the playoffs. Help us in a world of clickbait dross, actually deliver some independent quality content that's not vanilla and beige. Right, on to the Scott Hogan touch count meter. It's at the moment, it's 4-0 to Chris Budd and his merry men against Dan Rogers and his merry men.
Have I suffered a bit like Eintracht Frankfurt have here, and Chris's Bayer Leverkusen has stuffed me?
Well, I was going to let you off this week because old Scotty boy did not feature, despite getting promoted. His work is done. He scored against Ipswich, got them promoted. Mm. It didn't feature in the 2-2 away draw against Stoke. I mean, I thought they'd, you know, they're paying some money. I thought they'd run him out.
I think he ran out a long time ago, Dave.
Right, so since Mr. Hogan didn't play, we can't really do a touch count meter. So we're going to, for the sake of healthy competition, this is the question. When Scott Hogan signed for Aston Villa, it was on deadline day, January the 31st. So we're looking, this question basically looking at the value that Sheffield United got from their loan. Mm. Signed on deadline day, up until that point for Villa, had started 0 games, came on as a substitute 6 times. So in these 17 games available for Sheffield United, how many starts did Scott Hogan make? We'll do it too. How many substitute appearances and how many starts? We'll go for the starts first. How many starts out of 17 games did Scott Hogan make for Sheffield United? Who's going first? Chris Budd.
Okay. I'm going to, out of 17 games, I'm going to say 5 starts.
How many starts?
And that's been generous.
You're going with 5.
Dan, yeah. Rogers.
Oh, God, there's a lot riding on this pride honour. I'm going to go with 4.
Oh, I had that in my head. I think Dan's got
it.
You
had it in your head. You didn't say it, though, did you?
Yeah, it's a big difference.
Big difference. Please be right.
There's a big difference, Scott, between wanting to touch the ball and actually touching it.
Do you want the answer first to the first question, or shall we save that?
Yeah, I need to know whether I've scored, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the correct answer was 5 starts.
Oh, Jesus. I literally couldn't hate Scott Hogan and Chris Budd anymore. I just couldn't.
You're going to have to draw up one of those lists of people you're going to kill.
I'm going to get a voodoo, bud.
My face is going on the dartboard.
So he made 6 substitute appearances for Villa. How many substitute appearances did he make for Sheffield United? 17 games, he started 5. So there's 12 other games. How many substitute appearances did he make in those 12 games? Dan Rogers, go first.
6.
Chris Budd.
7.
Oh, only 3. So Dan, wow. Dan Rogers notches up a score there.
Consolation.
5-1, or as we call it, a Villa V Blues.
What are you trying to say? That was the Mikel Forsell of goals. Is that what you're trying to
The ironically cheered.
Here's a good one. I mean, it's not a tiebreaker because this result's been known for a long time. 6 substitute appearances for Villa. How many minutes in total? Ooh. Did Scott Hogan play for Aston Villa this season? And how much are they paying him again?
£50 million.
A week. 30,000-ish.
And all
a
the
week.
Carrots he can eat.
6 substitute appearances. How many minutes in total for Villa this season?
20.
21.
Oh, look at that. Look how crafty he was with that. 68 minutes.
The crowd goes wild.
Oh, he's pegged it back. It's 5-2 now. Should we keep this going until he wins?
Until everybody's switched off.
Right, one final one, just for shits and giggles. How many goals did he score this season? Dan Rogers.
1.
Chris Budd.
I'm going to say one as well.
What?
You're both wrong. It's two. Right, let's move on.
I hate Scott Hogan. Oh, I really do.
So that's the last one of the season because Scott Hogan will not be playing anymore in the 2018
any more football at all.
2018-2019 campaign. So Chris Budd wins that one 5-2. Congratulations. Trophy is in the post. Right, Norwich game. We'll keep this as a short recap. I mean, when you look at that team that went out, because of the squad depth now, everybody's pretty much fit, which is fantastic going into the playoffs.
It's a great time.
The team looked pretty good, even though six players you'd expect to start against West Brom were rested. Just read them out quickly. El Ghazi, Grealish, Abraham, McGinn, Mings, El Mohammadi. There were certain players that needed game time going into, well, obviously with the playoffs on the horizon. Courtney House was probably top of those, I would say. Lansbury... Yep. Yeah, will he feature? I doubt it. I thought Elphick might have got a bit of a run, but that kind of shows you who's in the pecking order behind Juan Zabi and Mings.
It's swung wildly for Elphick this season, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it couldn't have gone...
Doesn't know if he's coming or going. He only came back because he was pretty much a guaranteed starter, and suddenly there were centre-backs coming out of everywhere because obviously we only had one recognised centre-back at one stage, and that was James Chester. So Norwich went strong. I was expecting them to get a point. I thought they would settle for a point, if not beat us. But and after the early exchanges, you just think, well, Norwich, they want to win this and they want to put the icing on the cake. But then Villa, sweeping statement, but I thought Villa bossed most of the game from, let's say, half an hour onwards. Mm. And with, let's say, better finishers, could have won that game as easy as they lost it. What was your quick take of that in a nutshell?
It was a nice novelty to turn up to a game this year and not really give a toss what the score was going to be. Knowing that it's kind of, all about the playoff game the week after. So it's, almost like a bit of a pre-season outing. I thought there were some good patches. I thought there were moments where you could see why Norwich were where they were. I think their two fullbacks had a really good go. I was very impressed with them.
Yeah.
Pookie got his customary goal, fox in the box type finish. And
Buendia, he's crazy, isn't he? He's a decent player. Feisty.
I thought they were a really good footballing team. I think Smith said the same afterwards. It was two teams who, it was never going to be a particularly feisty game, but both sides kind of went for it. They, I thought, had the little bit more cutting edge in the final third, which would figure. One thing I thought was sort of glaring was that you can see the energy that you lose by not having McGinn and Grealish in the middle of the park. Yeah. And the distribution that Mings gives you. And I was El Mohammadi down the right as well. I think, Hutton, while he likes to bomb forward, El Mohammadi does give you more control with the ball and a much better delivery.
Yeah, I think the takeaways, you can see those partnerships down the flank that we have now in our first 11, like your Taylor and El Ghazi, and obviously Elmo. And, it switches, doesn't it?
I think that's one of the things... And moving into the Baggies game, that's one of the positions, isn't it? The right-hand side of midfield that's up for... Yeah. That's probably the one position that's not locked down, I think.
Yeah, because Adoma, he did some great things in the defensive half, like winning the ball back, but at times he was a bit casual in his final pass. I'm trying to decide if he did himself any favours to actually start the game against the Baggies at Villa Park. Dan, what did you think? Would you go for Green or Adoma?
I think... Green is not the finished article yet. Like him, and I think you see glimpses of excellence from Green. There was a particular cutback in the second half that was begging for someone to run onto it in the six-yard box and stab it home. But then there's other frustrating things with Green. He's got that habit of wanting to, beat players over and over and over again, when he can just put a ball in. With that said, it looked like, there were six changes. I think that, Green often would benefit from having a player like Grealish or McGinn near to him, or even an El Ghazi drifting around. So there was a little bit of that. I thought that, the 70 minutes in the middle were really good from Villa, if a bit wasteful. It was the 10 minutes either end. It was the 10 minutes at the beginning when Norwich had come out really wanting to win it. And then at the end, we were casual, having made a couple of changes. And I think one eye on the playoffs.
Because what Green's shown in a few of the previous games, that he's been quite tidy linking up and actually coming inside off the right flank.
He's
and he
got
plays
some
well
Green.
With Grealish, because he's obviously played with Grealish through the ranks. So that kind of helps as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the frustrating things I think with Green, as you said, you know, he's not the final product yet. Is he's, you know, he's quick, but I wouldn't say he's got that real devastating pace. I don't think he's got the tricks of an Alghazi, but he doesn't have that. He hasn't got that end product yet. He doesn't. There's so many moments where he gets into a good position and you think, just wrap your foot around it and deliver. And he didn't. You know, and I think on the Norwich game, he kept cutting back to try and get on his right foot every time, and he became quite predictable the longer the game went on. He almost sort of lost a bit of belief that he could actually beat the fullback.
He's a decent impact sub, though, for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Obviously, you know, the defence tires, and the last thing you want is somebody like him coming at you, because he is pretty direct when he's running at you.
And that's why I wonder whether we need to deploy him a little bit differently, because I always think the threat of Alghazi is he wants to go at that 45-degree angle at goal. You know, if he goes down the flank, he can deliver a ball, but he's also quite eager to cut inside and get a shot off. And I think with Green that he looks more dangerous, more of a freer attacking role, if you like. And I think that's where, if you're going to, you know, you push between a choice between him and Adoma. I thought Adoma was, you know, he scored lots of goals for us last season and was a threat. This season, it just looks, I don't think he's got that turn of pace. I think his passing is...
He's packing.
He's packing his bags.
I'm sure.
he's allegedly packing. And I think if I was had to make a choice on the morning of of an important game, I think I'd probably just go with Green at the moment.
But the thing is, I think you can use him as a combo, can't you? You can put, you know, 160 minutes, one half an hour, whatever.
But he gives you great cover on the defence. Adoma's got.
Yeah, and Smith has been doing that, using combinations of wingers over the last few games to obviously freshen it up.
He could even go with the goal threat of Codger out on the wing.
Mm. Yeah, the pineapple threat.
We're not short of options. I mean, to be fair, he took his goal well. It certainly wasn't one of his worst games this season.
Yeah, we'll call him the Pineapple Express from now on. People were saying, oh, Davis should get the start against Norwich. But I think because Codger's got a few games in his bag and he's started to score a goal, what you do need is a second striker who's actually scoring. Because if we're playing one up top and suddenly we're chasing the game or... You know, for example, that Rotherham game where we went down to, if we're in the playoff final and it's shit or bust, and, Smith may go with that, the trick that he used against Rotherham where he put two up front. So you want Codger sharp or actually having game time. But saying that, I think Davis was good, I thought, against Norwich, as he was the last time he played him in that, is it 4-2?
He looks a real prospect, actually, all of a sudden. He looks trimmer, he's very, very strong, and his link-up play is fantastic.
Yeah, he just needs the goals, and then people will start believing in him, I think. Yeah.
I think so, because his offering outside of the box compared to Codgers is you're going to get 100% work rate, and he does put himself about, I think, as a genuine target man. He's a, you know, he's a much better player than Codger, but what Codger offers you in the... You know, the 18-yard box is a proper finisher.
Yeah.
You know, because Codger hasn't had many chances in the last few games, but every time he gets in front of goal, he seems to bury it.
Codger's frighteningly unpredictable. I think that hurts. That's hurt his career at Villa Park, I think, because you don't know what actually you're picking. You know, there's been countless occasions this season where he's looked disinterested, but then you look at those cameos like Rotherham, and his performance against Rotherham and actually against Norwich are very, very different performances. But strikers are measured by goals at the end of the day. I think if we could work out how to use him perhaps alongside Abraham, because that's something else in the mix as well.
But ultimately, Pineapple Express, I don't think is an intelligent hold-up.
No question he isn't.
His hold-up play is not intelligent or selfless, which it needs to be. I mean, his first thought is, how do I get a shot off while I'm surrounded by four players? Rather than just, passing it without even thinking about it. The only other thing before we move on, because we're starting to get into selection questions for the playoffs, just one quick, in a couple of words, Lansbury. I think Smith likes Lansbury because he's fit. He's getting him on the field for, little cameos here and there. Obviously, as his first start of the season against Norwich. But he obviously fancies him above Bjarnason. And, had a few neat touches here and there, Lansbury, but I think Lansbury needs 10 games before you really can make a judgment on him.
I think Lansbury's he's very much a Smith-type player, isn't he? He's very neat, tidy on the ball. I think his set play delivery is generally quite good. So I think he gives you an option, but I think he's going to be... I think he's ahead of Bjarnason. Well, clearly he's ahead of Bjarnason on the bench. I think Bjarnason will find himself... That's probably the end of his season now.
Well, Bjarnason looks like one of the most disinterested footballers in the world when he comes on against Norwich. And I think
The lap of honour, I think he trundled off quite early, didn't he?
Well, I don't know how much we can read into body language, but you know, he wasn't interested when we went down to Bodymore Heath recently as well, was something I didn't mention. Just picking up on the Lansbury point, I think there's two things at play here. I do think that he's got all the attributes to be a great footballer. We haven't seen it nearly enough for various reasons at Villa Park. There's also something else I was thinking about Lansbury as he was playing, because he's quite neat and tidy, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's actually at the stage of his career where if you're not going to do it now at Villa or seize the opportunities that you get, where next? What is the next move for him?
Well, I tell you what happens next. He moves to Burnley and he wins Player of the Year.
He'll never displace the crab.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Let's get on to the West Brom playoff.
Dun, dun, dun.
Just quickly, West Brom over two legs or Leeds over two legs? Who would you have preferred?
Albion.
Okay, that's that one settled. These playoffs should be pretty juicy because when these teams have played each other, and this is 12 over 12 games when Villa have played Derby, West Brom, Leeds, and you know when the Leeds have played West Brom, Derby, Villa. A team has scored three or more goals 8 times in those 12 games, and there's been 4 or more goals in a game 8 times of those 12 games. So potentially these playoffs are going to lay on some fireworks. The best team in the playoffs in terms of those results against each other are Leeds. They have, out of 6 games, they've won 4, drawn 1, lost 1. That loss coming against West Brom and the draw against Villa. Derby, weirdly, have beaten West Brom twice at a canter, while Villa and Leeds have both slammed Derby twice. But then you go to the current form, and I think this is the real indicator, because Villa, as we said in the last show, haven't played any of the top 4 teams with essentially our fantastic 4, Mings, Grealish, Abraham and McGinn, all on the same pitch at the same time. So we're going into these playoffs in a different shape that these teams haven't faced yet. I mean, when we played Leeds, even though it was only, you know, very recently, we didn't have Abraham, and it's a big deal not to have you, the one guy who scored like pretty much 30% of your goals with his 25. So if you look at the current form, last 12 games, this is like the first week of March, Villa, I mean, 1-10, drawn 1, lost 1, and that loss was against Norwich when we were fanning around with resting 6 players. The next team close, and this could be an indication of what Derby's chances are against Leeds, even though they've been beaten 6-1 over 2 games already. They've only been beaten once, like Villa, in those last 12 games. They've won 6, drawn 5, lost 1. So,
and they've scored a heck of a lot of goals.
Mm. Yeah, they've scored more goals than any team in the Championship. 26, which is one more than Villa. I think Norwich also have 25. But to suggest they've only lost 1 in those 12 games suggests they've got a bit more of a resilience about them, and they've struggled against Villa and Leeds. Villa have obviously bettered them 7-0 over 2 games, and Leeds 6-1, which shows they probably can't keep up with the dynamoism of, you know, like your McGinn or how Leeds play. But maybe Mr. Lampard's addressed that now. And Leeds are the weakest in terms of form of all four teams in the playoffs. They, in those 12 games, they've won 6, drawn 1, lost 5. And they, you know, they have that spirit if they play on the day, but they're just not putting their chances away. And I don't think they're not incisive enough, I don't think. And they may struggle. And I think that first game against Derby is going to be quite interesting to see the level of Leeds.
That's a great overview of things, really. And I don't think we could hope to be in a better position going into the playoffs, to be honest. And, you know, everything, all things considered, especially given the fact that we've got full strength, we've seen Leeds up close recently, but I think that because that we knew or suspected they'd be playoff contenders, we've been keeping a close eye on them. I think Derby could, over two legs, be a real test for them. They look chaotic in game, and I think they seem to lack discipline for me. The Albion, from my point of view, concede too many goals. I think they might have goals in them, but I think that they look as likely to concede. And I honestly sit here, fans, over two legs, over 180 minutes against the Albion, I just see us having too much for them, on a level playing field.
Just to throw in some stats, in the last 12 games, the Albion have scored 20 and conceded 19. Villa have conceded 8, and the other two teams in the playoffs have conceded 12. So Albion are shipping goals. And traditionally, they've always had a reasonable defence, but, that was under the likes of Pulis or whatever. Obviously, they're a bit more expansive now, and they do feature two players who have got over 22 goals. Is it Gale? It's got 23 and Rodriguez has got 22.
Yeah. I mean, Albion have got the worst defensive record in the top 10.
Yeah.
So it shows that their firepower has got them where they are. You know, I think they won 7-1 earlier in the year, and they battered Leeds, they went to Norwich and went on their day. They're a good side.
It's a serious hindrance when you're as leaky as that with goals. And we've been there, that you can have as many goals and creativity in the team if you want. You cannot, and this was something we were saying earlier in our season, you can't be approaching games of football thinking you've got to score 3 to win.
Well, never mind that. Can you imagine in the old days listening to the radio to get your results? Aston Villa, 5. And you're high-fiving everybody. Nottingham Forest, 5. It does. I mean, that's the prime example of how it's undone us all the way. And now we're sorted out. And as you were alluding to, the stars have aligned. I don't want to say it out too loudly.
No.
We've got the form. Everybody's fit. And we look like a Premier League team at the moment.
Do you know what? The thing that you said about we look a team.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. You look at, we don't want to look back too much on it, but you compare it to last season when we sort of coasted into the playoffs, because we knew we'd kind of fucked up the top two by about mid-March. We knew we were going to be probably fourth. Fulham came on their merry way, on a crazy run of form from about January, and had all the momentum. Villa just sort of stumbled into it. We kind of played against a very average Middlesbrough side and made hard work of that and made a complete cock-up of the final. This Villa team, you see the way they play, and I think the disappointments of last year will spur on quite a few of that team. I think there's a lot of players in this side who've got a lot to play for, not just at Villa Park.
Well, I mean, this Villa team now, compared to last season, it has an identity. I mean, you look at against Norwich, basically you just slotted players in to play this pretty much the same system. And we know as fans now what we're watching. We know, the DNA of this team.
I think the only thing that, as you said, it had the system was there, the style of play was there. The only thing that it really lacked, I think, was that ability to go into fifth gear that McGinn and Grealish and Abraham up front give you. We just didn't have that little bit of cutting edge. But actually, the way the back line played, I thought they were great.
And compare that to being at Wembley last season, and you're looking at, just talked about fan as supporters now, we know the DNA of this Villa team. What were we watching at Wembley? We're looking at a team that was scared to cross the fucking halfway line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that playoff final was very similar to that toxic game against West Brom in February, when you just thought, "What on earth are they doing?"
But that shows what a transition that we've been through, really. That I think that we had the makings of something and badly lost our way when we drew 2-2 at the Hawthorns in December. Courtesy of that Rodriguez handball, and we almost had to go through that. That experience to find that DNA, to lift the phrase that David just used. I think just in a nutshell, looking down the list of teams, I think there's a real, I don't know, again, you don't want to be, I don't want to open myself up to being quoted on this, but there seems like an obvious DNA for each team. Villa we're the form team. I think that we've got some fantastic quality players that have got individual ability to change a game, but equally play so well as a unit. Derby are carrying, you know, they're the momentum team, aren't they, that they've skipped in. I don't think they'll have enough. The Albion, for me, are like we were last season, you know, yeah. The description that Chris just gave. And Leeds are, I just think that they've got too much has happened for them. You know, they should have gone up in second place, in my view, if they're more organised, they're more disciplined. And they're that team that, you know, they were easily riled and ill-disciplined in the 1-1 draw with us. And they didn't look at all ready to mount a Premier League promotion for me on the final day.
But them, I mean, playing Leeds is a bit like, I don't know, it's like international football, it's like playing somebody like Portugal.
Yeah.
Where they're spirited and they'll fight and they'll cheat and they'll do anything to try to win. And mm-hmm. Villa, and that was a good thing about that game coming when it did. Villa, they learnt a lot from that, and they learnt a lot about themselves that they could battle Leeds. They also learnt, don't put the fucking ball out of play when one of their players is down. In the final, we will not be doing it. Conor Hourihan, I've sent him, I think I bought 25 first-class stamps and I sent him 25 memos saying, Hourihan, if you get the ball in the final against Leeds, do not put it out against the corner, because this time we just, by all means necessary, you've got to take the same attitude as how Leeds play and just fucking put them to the sword by fair or foul. But Villa have got that guts. I mean, we're talking about stars aligning and all these factors coming into play. Villa have got that guts. Mings is, he loves it. He loves a tussle. He loves getting stuck in. And we got McGinn as well. It's the same, you know, same type of temperament of player. Competitive, likes to get stuck in, likes to fight. Grealish as well. Grealish is up for it. And, you know, he's got a little wry smile. He knows when he gets clobbered, you know, the bloke's getting booked. And he'll play to that. So I think we've got character to take, if Leeds get to the final, for example, to take them on in a firefight.
And actually some discreet hidden surprises for people. I think if you'd have said to me that Glenn Whelan will play a pivotal role in you getting and sustaining a playoff push, I'd have probably laughed. You know, I think many people would have been dismissive of that. How Whelan is used, I think, over the next two games and utilised both at Villa Park and the Hawthorns, I think that's key to this as well. And I don't think a lot of people, opposition fans, will be quite aware of that.
Unless we're 6-0 up after 36 minutes.
Well, once he's scored his hat-trick, he can go off, of course, old Wheeler.
Going back to that Norwich game, he almost scored a worldie. Was it the outside of his foot?
Yes.
Yeah, he had a crack.
And I think some of those players on the bench will have parts to play, because if their roles come in, it's dictated by the score. I think Whelan plays potentially in the second leg against Hawthorns, you know, depending on what we need. But looking at that game, I mean, the first game, even if we don't get a great result at Villa Park, I think we've got the firepower to go to the Hawthorns and win that game, whatever the situation. I mean, I don't want to go 2-0, take a 2-0 loss to the Hawthorns.
No, but I think that we saw at the back end of last year that we carried enough threat even when we hadn't really formed our identity as a unit, really.
Yeah.
El Ghazi absolutely terrified them at the Hawthorns. You know, him and Grealish, before Grealish got clobbered. You know, I know El Ghazi obviously scored that worldie, but those are the kind of players that, you know, including players like having Green or Codger to switch in or switch out. It very much depends, as you say, whether we go there holding a lead. Smith doesn't strike me as the type of manager, and on current evidence, won't approach that game, even if we've, you know, he won't go in it with a defensive attitude.
He's
That's
quite
not
aggressive.
Something we've seen.
He's quite aggressive, and I think he'll go all out. And I mean, Villa, if they have another gear, they could storm through these playoffs. But Villa are Villa, and we know we don't like to do things easily.
The interesting loss going into the two games against Albion is actually the two best players at Villa Park in that game, and, you know, in February were so dreadful and completely outclassed, really, is that Gareth Barry, who was arguably the man of the match that day, his season's over.
Is it?
He's had an operation, so he won't play. And obviously Hal Robson-Kanu, who scored that day, will now miss both games with suspension.
Yeah.
After, you know, getting a stupid straight red. So their midfield is slightly less than it would have been, I think.
Yeah, so their pack has shrunk. And I think Leeds have got injuries.
Well, I think probably one of their best players in Alioski, who I remember absolutely destroyed Neil Taylor at Villa Park in December.
Yeah.
He's a very good player. He's a big loss for them. But I think, you know, the loss of Barry to Albion, Dan was saying earlier about how the Albion have gone into this run of games, and you think, well, Albion haven't had what I'd class as a big game for a while. They've kind of just coasted through for quite a while. Villa have had pressure on them for a number of weeks, as you said before, with the Leeds game. I think we had the really high pressure game that was the Bristol one. Mm. I think what we had thrown at us at Rotherham was a very different challenge, but we passed that with flying colours.
Good test to have that one.
Yeah, and even, you know, the earlier in that run, going to St Andrews, winning the way we did, and then being able to run through Middlesbrough and Derby, we've kind of shown we can win all sorts of ways. I think the big criticism we'd all had of Smith at one point was, can his team play badly and win? You look at this Villa team now and go, well, yes, they can now mix it. They can get a result if they have to. Mm.
They can win any which way, can't they?
Yeah, because we've got match winners all over the field and on the bench now.
I mean, reading about some West Brom fans talking about their team going into it, I think they played a relatively full strength team against Derby, and that, you know, their fans were saying, we're still looking for our system, our identity. And the interesting thing was, they were fourth, and the owners thought that wasn't good enough when Darren Moore got sacked. And you're thinking, well, that's, you know, I wouldn't be moaning about being fourth after getting relegated, because it can go tits up, as you know, as we found out, or it can get even worse, and you can, you know, do a double drop.
You want to say, look at Sunderland, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, look at what's the evidence of West Brom improving since Moore got sacked?
I think they've won six, drawn one and lost three. So they haven't been travelling well.
Well, their defeats are all away from home. That was the key thing I picked up from that stat.
Yeah. And I think since they won at Villa in February, they've actually conceded 14 goals in those games as well. They're averaging two goals a game away from home conceded. Mm. So, the stats would say, you know, it's not always that simple, but the stats would say they are there for the taking.
Yeah.
At Villa Park.
But this is the thing. I mean, stats are all well and good, but also there's that on the day, rising to the occasion. But the good thing is, Villa players have been playing in front of full houses in the last few games. Yep. So these aren't players that are going to get flustered. So they should be bang on it.
I think we've got guys, so you look at our, you know, the probable starting lineup, and you think, these are guys who are looking forward to this. They won't, you know, Mings will be in his element.
Yeah.
The one maybe who you think, you know, will he mentally have it, is maybe Steer. I don't know how many big games he's played himself, but I actually think so far this season, you know, I think he's actually done really well.
Yeah.
But I look at now El Mohamed, he's played in World Cups, and Twan Zabi, I think, looks just slotted straight back into the back four.
Twan Zabi could play for Man United, I think.
He,
you know, one of their most comfortable ball players is at Villa Park at the moment.
He's so assured, isn't he? When you look at what
to the point of arrogance.
the really good side of arrogant. Yeah. You know, he's a fantastic athlete, and he's a brilliant footballer.
Absolutely.
As well.
I think that's a good point to pick up on, is that we haven't got many players who are scarred by our mediocrity as well. You know, it was obviously likely to be Hutton's last game. And, you know, the guy's given a lot to the football club, but, you know, don't want this to sound like a terribly negative comment, but he's, for me, associated with many years of underachievement from Villa. Some seasons, he was in the bomb squad and wasn't included. But my point is that there's not that scarring across the team. And I think that, you know, whilst in recent seasons you might say, you know, a Grealish was there when, through the good and the bad, you know, he's gone full cycle with Villa the last few years.
Yeah,
it's been a steep learning curve that's improved players like him. You know, he's gone from the high of bursting onto the scene to, you know, the lows of the off the field stuff, to actually developing into, I didn't think this would be the case actually, and I'm happy to go on record, you know, the ability to go on and become a genuinely top class footballer. And we've got this fantastic look that, you know, you look at someone like McGinn, I think, could comfortably slot into a Premier League side now, but I think in time could develop into a really top class midfielder. Yeah. And, you know, is this the coming together for us at the right time, with a bit of luck, a bit of a change in philosophy with the management, which, again, I have to admit, I don't think many of us could foresee that coming and coming together as it did, even, you know, 15 games ago.
Yeah.
And then you marry that up against the opposition that we're set to face. You know, you look at the Albion, they're still in that transition of having been relegated, and I think they're also going to be hamstrung by very unclear decisions at the hierarchy of the club around what they did with their manager.
Albion's manager hasn't had time to, I mean, Smith came in, obviously you get that bounce, players excited, expressing themselves initially, but then the reality kicked in, a few injuries here and there, but he's had that time to instill his philosophies, it had that time to get over a few humps.
But Albion, just a couple of weeks ago, we're in discussions to appoint the Preston manager, and you think, well, you know, where's your stable base there? Where's your confidence in even, you know, is he temporary? Is he permanent? What's the...
Well, yeah, I think Villa, for the first time for a long time, are actually all, I mean, supporters, manager, players are all moving in one direction. But that's underlined by knowing the reality that you do actually have to work to get out of this league. Because, I know for a fact when we dropped... And I've seen, messages from Grealish to people where he essentially, without saying what he said, is expecting to get promoted in that first season just because people are saying we've got the best squad, we've got the best team.
Mm.
So there was always this bit of complacency. And I mean, that's generally, but also potentially in Grealish. But he's learned the realities. You know, he's had some horrific injuries.
Two bad ones, actually.
Which, you know, that gives you, as a player, you start to think, well, actually, this... Life's short, career's short, and you could be sitting on the sidelines for a year if you get the wrong injury.
Would it be improper of me to say, sorry to jump in, just before I forget on Mings, is
yeah,
he's had chronic injury throughout his career and the formative part of his career, and I mean this with no disrespect whatsoever to Bournemouth, but there's some difference motivating yourself and turning out in front of 11,000 people, and it's got to be something arriving in a city like Birmingham and having 40,000 people who have been craving a defender of the quality and of the... He's a great communicator with a fan, and that's not a very good way of putting it, but I think he understands.
Well, he was parked up outside the Aston Tavern before the Norwich game.
Yeah.
I think the fans have bought into Mings from the word go, haven't they? Like straight away, he is to us this season what someone like Mitrovic was at Fulham. He's the piece of the puzzle where everyone's thought, yeah, I think we're all right here.
Well, he's spoken well publicly, but he's also demonstrated through his actions. You know, he's dragged us since he's arrived on loan through any number of impressive performances where, you know, even when we were struggling for form, you could see what we were trying to do through him. And I think that breathes confidence into a team, and it allows, you know... We don't have to go back too far, and we don't need to revisit it at any length, but our defence was so chronically bad. To have someone like that drop into it was, you know, it was season changing, actually, when you think about it.
Well, I mean, traditionally, in my time of supporting Villa over the many centuries, Villa supporters have always enjoyed celebrating a damn good centre-back.
Yeah.
And he's the first one we've had for a while. I mean, this is the problem about the precarious situation we're in. There is no other alternative but to win these fucking playoffs. And I think that is a big motivating factor.
Well, it has to be for the football club, because the reality is that if we don't get promoted, there is not a prayer that Mings and others will be at Villa Park next season.
We're talking Mings, we're talking Grealish, we're talking McGinn.
We have to get out of this division.
And people saying, oh, yeah, but, you know, McGinn's got a 5-year contract or whatever. It's like, it doesn't matter. Those contracts aren't worth
all
shit.
All that does guarantees you a good fee.
And that's the thing for me, that when people say, I'd rather stay in the Championship over the Premier League, I absolutely understand the arguments and the points that people make for that. But the status quo won't remain. It won't be another exciting... It will be all the shit interspersed between the good bits. And you won't be watching Grealish and co.
Yeah, we'll be downgraded as a club. I mean, the party's over and we will be officially a Championship team in terms of one that potentially could be down for 10 years, 15 years.
Oh,
it's not... The big thing for me going into the playoffs now, as you guys have said, is that you can see in this team, maybe unlike last year's team, certainly the first year we came down, is this team and the squad and the fans, they clearly have belief. You see when they get on the pitch, whoever they come up against, they go, we're going to win this. Mm. And that little, as you said, it's basically now or never. You know, Grealish alluded to it in his Daily Mail interview over the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, he knows it's now or never. He wants to be here, but if it doesn't go well, he knows he won't be. And I'm sure there's a few of them who'll be thinking the same. They maybe didn't realise that as much last year. This year, it's very obvious that the fans know it, the players know it. I think they know there's a job to do. And last year, where I think, you know, we've said jokingly, you know, they were putting pictures up of them, super gluing fucking trainers to lockers and stuff.
Yeah,
this year's team looks very, very focused.
Yeah.
They know they've got a job to do. And the way Smith's talking is very much, the 10 wins on the bounce was great. Ultimately, does it mean anything if we go up? No. Now, if we don't go up, it doesn't mean anything.
This is what I don't like about all this social... I look at it as... candy flossy, airy fairy social media where everything's, oh, this is fantastic. You know, 100 pictures after every game, making out every player to be like some kind of legend or whatever. Mm. It's all setting things up for a big fall when
the reality is any real supporter out there who's not buying into all this marketing knows, right, there's a job to be done here. We have to win these playoffs, but we have a team we can believe in now. Last season, we didn't really believe in that team. We had some characters, you know, your Snodgrasses, your Terrys, but it wasn't a team.
Well, there wasn't enough of them as well. I think that Terry and Snodgrass were the standout performers, where there was no, there's six or seven of them there.
The mentality, as we saw in the first half of the, on that, you know, it was Steve Bruce's very, very cautious, negative mentality.
And too much was left to chance as well, and that was reflected in how the club was run, and it all panned out with Wynas and Dr. Tony's eye. Now you've got Purslow, you see, and I do think that you're starting to see this calm, professional, quite thought through approach starting to emerge.
Well, it's a start of a winning mentality, isn't it?
Yeah, always be careful though, because when you're winning, things that shouldn't be happening get glossed over, if you know what I mean, off the pitch.
We're far from perfect, and I think there's lots of change to be done, but ultimately we're a football club and we'll be judged on the results, and I think that Aston Villa need to, you know, if you're going to get promoted, now's the time, you know, this is it.
And I look outside of Villa briefly, and I speak to a lot of fans of other supporters, and everyone's sort of looking at Villa going, they fancy us to go up.
There we go.
I think a lot of other people in the league look at Villa and go, yeah, they're looking in good shape. I spoke to fans of Premier League teams, and they go, you're in good shape here. You can do this year.
Yeah, but they don't watch us 24/7, so who gives a fuck? It's what we say as Villa fans. When we went to Wembley, when we went to the semi-final of the playoffs last season, and it was like going to the dentist twice for 90 minutes against Middlesbrough. And that was a Middlesbrough team that we could have battered if we had a way of playing. If we wanted to, exactly. And what did we do this season? We battered them twice.
There's so much to be said for belief, isn't there? On the field and in the stands. You know, the atmosphere is better in the ground, and the players, they just want to go for it, and the fans want to see them go for it. And I'm sure this team will.
Yeah, but it's connected to actually having a method rather than just having a way of not getting beaten, and hopefully you'll win.
Well, you're set up to win games.
This is having faith in your ability to win games by playing.
Yeah.
And before, it was almost like we're overthinking. And this league has been overthought. What have we always been saying on this podcast? From day dot, this league is not that good. If you can get your shit together, you can put winning runs together. Mm-hmm. Fulham out of nowhere did it. Millwall last year did it.
Well, that numpty at Bristol City's cracked it. If he had a bigger squad, he could probably get Bristol City out of the division.
And Sheffield United came out of nowhere. They got promoted. They cracked it.
He's an excellent manager, by the way.
Oh, well, I keep doing his PR on this show.
A great video of him, by the way, coming out of his promotion celebrations. Absolutely smashed.
He'd had a lovely evening, hadn't he? Yes.
Brilliant.
But we've always said that about Villa, but it was always about you just need to have a team that plays like a team, have conviction, actually have some tactics and a way of playing that you stick to, and you allow it to develop, and you know, have faith in it that it will actually come good. And then, I mean, we didn't expect it to happen, but then we did go finally on that long winning run. And when you look back on it, you think, well, that's what we should have expected to be doing as soon as we got relegated. And you know, obviously, you spend a few months getting your team together. But if you've got a plan, and you know, we just had the emoji circus of you know, the owners that took over, and there was no real football plan. And the Villa engine, I mean, good God. that was...
Shelved.
It was a myth.
Resoundingly shelved.
I don't think it actually existed.
And the fact that none of these guys have gone on to do anything since is no surprise. They're unemployable.
I mean, one of them's probably been executed, but we're
Oh, you laugh, it's probably true.
We don't know, do we? No news, very silent. Well, the other one was waiting for his court date, but that probably never came around because the prosecution doesn't exist anymore. Anyway, that's all allegedly, and we are jesting there. So are we going to commit to a prediction here? I mean, I don't like predictions because at the end of the day, they don't mean anything.
Are we talking score predictions? Is that where you would like to go?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't like to, but I'm sure our listeners like that kind of stuff.
I'll stick my neck out. I think that we are going to win 2-0 at Villa Park. And I think the return leg will be a nervy 2-2 draw.
That's not nervy.
It will be when they go 2-0 up.
Oh, yes. And we've all had a heart. We've all had a heart attack.
I'll be sat motionless in the Brummie Road end. By the way, I'll be the only person not moving, pale.
Grealish has been sent off at half time.
Oh God!
For diving.
Oh God!
We talk about these games in the context of if everything's going right, but
is this before or after the Jed Steer own goal?
If we play Leeds, for example. Just on the basis of that last game, you know, there's going to be a red card potentially. So
it could be a nasty game that,
and that can change a game. Just you know, the way the cookie crumbles. Anyway, Chris Budd, what are you saying?
I think we will score in both legs. I think we will win the home leg 2-0. I'm going to go with Dan's prediction, and I think we will go and get a 1-1 draw at the Hawthorns.
David, you're up.
I think. Villa, well, I'm just going to go for it. I don't give a shit. Ball's out.
10-0.
Villa, if it's not 6-0 after 36 minutes, it'll be 3-1 at Villa Park, and we'll beat them at the Hawthorns as well.
Will, yes.
Love it.
We don't
care. Happy days.
We're just going to be beating teams now. That's going to be our
mantra.
I like
it. Do you know what? We've had our loss. We've got it out of the way.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was a Mickey Mouse team we put out. This when that full team's out, the stars have aligned. Very dangerous to get cocky, but I think we kind of can be not cocky, but
it's not
confident.
Cocky, but they're very confident. There's no reason to not. But you don't win 10 games on the bounce if you're shit.
Yeah,
no. We are not a bad team,
and we are still with there's this freshness about it. I mean, we mentioned it in a couple of shows ago where you know your Mingses, your Courtney House, your Grealishes, you know they've had injuries or they haven't been playing. And, you know, we had a little rest on that last game as well. McGinn also had a couple of game suspension, you know, only a couple of months ago.
The only person who's probably had consecutive games recently is Neil Taylor of a long run. I can't think of anybody else who's actually had more than
and
a
he's
two
really
or three
benefited
game run.
From that run of games, by
he
way.
Has.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's grown into his role.
He actually needed the run, but that's only come in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Fulham, for example, their run last season, that started a lot earlier than ours. Yeah. And carried it through in the end. And we're in our prime, I feel.
To be honest with you, my arrogance now shines out. Was actually, I think at this moment in time, table aside, Villa are the best team in the league.
Yeah, and I'm not even wearing my claret and blue tinted glasses either. I think it's just facts, really.
That's what we're dealing.
Leeds, if they can rediscover their form, they are a threat. But I think our toughest test is the baggies over two legs because you've got that local derby nonsense.
Yeah,
that filters out things like form. And psychologically, we haven't beaten them this season. So there's a few things going in their favour.
We haven't beaten them for a while, actually. The last few times we've played them, you know, the year we went down, I think we lost both games, didn't we?
We beat them when it matters. That's the key thing.
Yeah.
It's a good point. But also, you know, they've got two top strikers in terms of scorers. We've got one if old Abraham, you know, first 5 minutes at Villa Park goes off injured.
No.
I think Albion have got one or two, you know, good players who can influence a game. I look at our spine of the team, and that's a Premier League spine. Yeah. And I would like to think over the next three games that could/should, touch wood, be the difference. We have more people who can really grab a game by the scruff of the neck.
What about Jake Livermore?
What about him?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And on that note, as we book our hotels at Wembley...
God.
We're not that uber confident, but there's definitely a massively different feeling than last season. This is in summation.
The feeling is, let's just get it fucking done. Just get it done now.
There's two worlds out there for us. There's the one where we celebrate and say, thank God that's over. Right, now let's see what happens to this football club. The other reality is, oh, fuck, we're in purgatory.
My question to you guys before we go then would be, if, you know, touch wood, everything went as we want it to, in the event we were to go up, would you be feeling a mood of celebration, or would it simply be, thank God that period in Villa's history is over? Would it be relief?
The latter one, because...
I think so as well. It certainly wouldn't be sort of open-top bus parade. Territory like Norwich, which by the way broke down,
didn't it? Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah.
I think the club marketing department will potentially walk a
dangerous line of making us seem like a tin pot club, if you know what I mean, and over celebrating it.
Yeah, and using words like promised land.
Yeah, but the thing to celebrate is how we came out of nowhere. I mean, we haven't done
absolutely
it yet.
Absolutely, yeah. The manner in which we could do it would be a hell of a story.
One minute you're writing off the season, and quite rightly so.
Well, we've written off the season about twice, haven't we? That Preston game, we thought, fucking hell, this season's done. And then again against Brentford and West Brom in February.
Because you also, you know, as a Villa fan, fate twists and turns in strange ways. So we never do it easy ways.
This was a club 5 days from administration, need I remind you.
Yeah, there's that second bit. Not only in season is it over, but last summer, the whole game was potentially over. And this season was just seen as like, well, let's just get through it. Let's just survive it.
Well, this is a club that's won a European Cup off someone's shin.
But what I will say is there is that scenario, that narrative of if we fail this season, people will go, oh, well, you know, it was a good season. It was an entertaining season. So it was a good, and I can't bring myself to that. If we fail, we've failed. Do you get me?
Completely. We said this weeks ago. There's been lots of singular, very, very good moments.
Very entertaining.
There's been some crazy games and ups and downs, but ultimately it doesn't mean anything if you don't get the result. We'll look back on the season. If we were to get promoted, you'd look back on the season and go, wow, that was a mental season. People have seen things that we've never seen before, like the 5-all and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean anything if you don't end the season on a high.
Yeah, it would be a waste of some great moments if we don't get promoted.
Absolutely.
If we get promoted, then you don't bring out the DVD of the season. You just bring out the DVD of the second half of the season. Well, you could do the first half as like a horror story double bill. Right, so we will slide in another show, hopefully before the second leg at the Hawthorns, where Dan Rogers is trying to infiltrate into the Brummy Road end.
Second time this season.
I think the only way you get out there alive is if we take a handsome lead into that second leg.
What I might do is I could be a Villa dog seller on the concourse. Get your dogs.
You know, in America, they they have those T-shirt cannons where they fire T-shirts into the crowd. If you do a Villa dog version, mate, you basically stand pitch-sized and fire Villa dogs down people's throats.
Firing Villa shirts into the Brummy Road end.
Right, until next time, please do, if you listen on Apple or / iTunes, please do give us a review and tell us what you like about the show. Give us a 5 stars, then you can say whatever you want about the show. Most importantly, it's just to get word of mouth out there. Please do tell friends who've got a bit of a sense of humour. This isn't like a mainstream show that just, any old Villa fan will listen to. It's obviously of a particular taste and intellect and humour. So please do spread the word, retweet, Facebook, share it if you can. But, most of all, tell your nearest and dearest. Please do become a patron if you can. Go to myomansaid.com and check out the patron option there. And why don't you buy a My Old Man Said t-shirt and wear it with pride at the Hawthorns and at Wembley. Until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.